Shadows of men who duck.
Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And let's start out with some music.
Stretch, but there's no sound underneath. The earth falls down. Forgotten veins left long untamed. Now Route 8 is sunk in shame. Cars are stranded, chaos flies. The cracks reveal where danger lies. A hungry mouth swallows it whole. The road's a beast with no control. Holes in the ground, they're pulling us under. Built on mines where greed did plunder. Route 80's a ghost, it's breaking apart. Abandoned dreams, tearing highways hard. Shadows of men who dug too deep.
All right, enough of that. We're having a major issue here in the Metro New Jersey area. It's Safety Wars for April 3rd, 2025. What kind of situation are we having? Well, and it's been in the national news on and off with everything. Essentially, New Jersey, and now this is shows you how things have changed since mid-1970s. So I grew up in New Jersey, born and bred here, right? I've done that, right? So today, you know, I had, I'll tell you what I was doing later on, but basically, let me finish the thought here. And, you know, like who's going to stop me, right? So back in the 1970s, we had to, a requirement in school where we had to learn, I went to public school for the first 6 years. We had a requirement that we had to go and, what's the word I'm looking for? We had to, okay, why is this not on? Hold on. Okay, I should be on the air. Oh, hopefully we're there. Basically, there was a requirement that we study New Jersey history. And part of that, you know, and they broke out these textbooks from like the 1950s. They ripped and torn covers. This is a Woodbridge School District for you. Ripped and torn covers and, you know, writing in them and everything else. And they mentioned all the, and what did they mention? They mentioned they mentioned mines. Yeah, New Jersey at one time, children had a lot of mines. Okay, great. They had mines. And then that was it. And they said, well, some nickel mines, some this, and then there's the mine that I'm familiar with up in Stokes Forest, where they had, silver in, and everything else. And what happens is, a lot of these mines, they're mapped out. Okay, here we are on the air. Now, so all these things are all mapped out. There are maps all over the place. You go up to the Sterling Mining Museum, I'll give them a plug because I enjoyed myself there. And it's like a trip back in time with how mines were managed back. And I think the Sterling Mine up in northern New Jersey, Bergen County, or might have been Sussex, just the tip of Sussex, they closed in 1986. So people are very, it's recent history, and a lot of former workers, co-workers, families of workers, still come to visit the mine. A couple of the guys died, and they got cremated, and they were put back into the mine there because they spent their lives there. But it's a step back in time on how safety was managed way back in the day there. And long story short, or short story long, as we say here on Safety Wars, New Jersey knows all about these places, right? And, there's something like 300 mines or whatever. The earliest mine was like 1712, but what's my point? They know that they're there. There are maps that were there. And as we know, nature abhors a vacuum, right? Nature abhors a vacuum. And when you have a void underground, eventually it's going to cave in. What kind of technology did they use to shore up these mines? Wood, stone, maybe some concrete later on. Eventually that's going to give way and you're going to have a void and you're going to have an issue. Now, what happened was they built a lot. No, where these mines were, cheap land, right? So highways were built. Schools were built, in some cases apartment buildings were built on top of these old abandoned mines. And if you look, because now we are in, if you're in the New Jersey area, right, we're just getting out of, and in the Northeast, we're just getting out of winter into spring, right? Spring was 2 weeks ago. And the leaves have not filled in yet. So you got these drone operators, right? Going all the way through this whole area, and they're looking at all this stuff and everything else, and they're finding these old ponds, and the ponds, they're lining them up with, like, maps, and the maps, right? So what happened was most Route 80 was, let me think, how old is Route 80? Let's plug this into Google. When was Route 80 built in New Jersey? So Route 80 was built in stages from the 1960s to 1973. And just to let you know, it's in New Jersey, it starts at the George Washington Bridge and runs north, right? Runs from east to west across northern New Jersey. And where, if you know where the Delaware Water Gap is, that's where it goes right by. It's the Delaware Water Gap. And then into Pennsylvania, and it goes across Pennsylvania and cross country. And I've been on the other end. The other end is north of San Francisco, and that's where the mothballed fleet for the U.S. Navy is right about where it ends. So this is a very, very long road. I've been on sections of it all over the country, all across, right, in my life. So 1960s is built. This means this was most likely built in New Jersey, planned and everything else, sometime in the 1950s. You have people there that are working on the project, I'm sure, and this is a little bit of speculation, but I don't think it's much speculation. They knew where the mines were. Or they had plans and everything else. They put things over mines. Now, what happens? Now, we're dealing with, depending on what you want to call a generation, 20 years roughly. Now we are three generations after that. I imagine there are a couple of engineers or people that worked on the mines, worked on the highway, still around, but most of them are, hopefully happily retired down in Florida or St. John's, or they have met their reward, their internal reward, whatever that is. All right. So they're not there. So what do you lose is institutional memory. Nobody remembers that these mines were there, and it was like a big shock. Right? when these sinkholes started showing up and then shut down Route 80 in both directions in New Jersey speak about mile marker in 34. And now, in finding these things, and especially one apartment building, they determined back in 2012 when they were building it, from what I've read, that this wasn't a risk. So if you look at the hazard matrix table, let's pull one up here, right? Right, and that, you know, safety professionals live and die by the hazard matrix table. So here we have, this. All right, let me share the screen. Hang on, folks. Right, share screen. And you have window. There we go. All right, so here we have the hazard matrix table. And this one is courtesy of safetyculture.com. It's a program I use here. And what you see here, right, how would this hazard matrix table be looked at, right, with this? So across the top, you have how severe would the outcomes be if risk occurred? It would be severe, right? People like, you know, collapsed buildings, sinking cars, that sort of thing. So it would be over on the right-hand side, severe risk, okay? Now, on the left-hand side, you have back in 2012, this did not happen when all these assessments were done. And even back, if they were thinking this far ahead in 1973, this is what we would call in the Northern Hemisphere a black swan event. But then people remind that there are black swans in Australia, I believe, and in the Southern Hemisphere. So this was, hey, this ain't going to happen. A cave-in ain't going to happen. So it would be like down here on the one rare. So it would be one rare, and it would be five, right? Would be the thing, one times five up here, and then it would be medium, all right? Right. Oh, it's medium. But yeah, it's going to be catastrophic, or we would say maybe it's going to be significant, right, with this. Now we know it's a major thing. It's going to be between major and severe. So there's some qualitative, subjective thinking on here. Now, there was a cave-in. We had to go and reassess things, don't we? Because now we had a situation where it's an incident, but nobody got hurt. It's definitely an incident. There was property damage here being the highway. Right, and they're rebuilding the highway. That's a complete and total cluster flub out there. All right, so now this has got to go up on the hazard matrix table. And where are we now? We've moved from rare or unlikely. Now we're into the moderate range, and we know that it's going to be a major issue here. If nobody gets hurt, or it could be a real severe issue if we have something like the Champlain Towers coming down or the condominium complex that had to be evacuated. Then, to my knowledge, nobody got hurt. The condominium complex that we're dealing with in North Carolina, where it had to be evacuated there because, maintenance issues and things of that nature. So, anyway. So now we're higher up on the probability table. It's moderate. It might happen, moderate. So now let's say that was moderate, and we know it's going to be a major thing. So, you know, 3 is moderate, major, times 4, and if we come up with 12. So now let's go down to 12 right on here, calculating the risk. 12 is tolerable risk. So must be reviewed in a timely manner to carry out improvement strategies. That's where we are on here with this. So, and this has to be reevaluated again and again and again and again here. And I'm sorry if, it didn't share so well here. So, let's see. right, with this, all right? So right here, let's try this again. So now before this happened, well, it was rare, but it's going to be a major thing, a number four. So one times four, and you scroll on down to the right here, a four on this scale would be, hold on, four would be acceptable. It was acceptable risk. Now that we know that something actually happened, now we're going to be moving up here where probability that it's going to happen is going to be moderate, right? And there's a moderate, we got all this stuff collapsing here. I would probably do an unlikely or moderate sum here. So we go 3 times 4, we come out with 12, right? So it's a high, right, here. So it's a moderate occurrence, right? Moderate probability, I would say. Major issue, so it would be a 12. So you come on, scroll on down here to 12, and it's tolerable. Must be reviewed in a timely manner to carry out improvement strategies. Makes sense. And that's how this version of a hazard matrix table works, and this is what I actually prefer using, is something like this where we quantify. Now, let's talk about this. Now, we have all the calculations. Now you are a government worker with sovereign immunity. How does that impact the table? All right, so we got 4 times 3, right? Came out with 12. Zero risk career-wise to the government employee. Maybe you get fired. Okay, maybe, but maybe you don't. So now that risk table is now at 0. You multiply everything by 0. So there's no risk for the government. What they do, what do they care? It's not coming out of their pocket. It's not coming out of their thing. So basically, what do we have to do before we have a analogous situation as what happened in California with the wildfires in LA, where you had 60 years of people saying, absolutely knowing that the fire infrastructure was Guvno. They know it. There's no doubt in anybody's mind here. And I, right, didn't do anything because this was a fire commissioner is a political patronage position. Spending money on this stuff, political, it didn't matter. Didn't matter because, hey, we're not going to raise property tax, so F it. We're going to break out the hazard matrix table, and then we're going to take vacations, and then during the high fire, and then we're going to, hey, you got to fix this. Ah, now we don't have to fix it. Who cares? Ah, and all this other stuff. As I call it, the fire commissioner meetings in California, we're going to post another one to Rumble, the gift that keeps on giving, right, with this. So what happens? What happens is we need to hold feet to the fire here. We need to hold feet to the fire, real simple. Well, what do you mean, Jim? If I was in New Jersey and it was adding anywhere from 3 to 6 hours to my commute a day, some people, you're in a tractor trailer. Okay, so you got to go either on 78, right? And now 78 is all backed up with all around the 287 interchange, right? 78 is all backed up. You're right. I drove through there today. Why? Because of construction and everything else. Now, Route 80 is shut down. Route 78 is all backed up right around the 287 interchange over there by Basking Ridge. If I were you guys in New Jersey, I would be saying not such a nice person to the people in charge of this. My question, number one, we need a complete, why is there not a complete evaluation? Is there a complete evaluation of where these mines are and where we built shit on top of it? Right? I think this is a reasonable question here, right? What do we do? Do we do this? Number one. Number two, if they were built on top of it, is there an evaluation done using modern techniques to assess that hazard?
where are we going to say, oh, that ain't going to happen? Thank God nobody fell in that sinkhole, right? I don't know what the accident thing is, anybody got hurt, but no, doing this work and managing this, but God forbid someone gets hurt or killed here. Now, the next one is follow-up. What's the follow-up on here? What's the follow-up? We're going to follow up on this and make sure you guys did your job. That is what has to happen here. Now, you can say, well, Jimmy, that's Route 80. That's Route 80 in New Jersey. Okay, I'm going to tell you the same thing that I said during the LA wildfires back in January and February and March. You need to go out in your community, especially in the Northeast, before things get, what's the word I'm looking for? And once the leaves grow in, of all these rural areas like the one I live in, and you have to go out there and say, oh, Mr. Fire Commissioner, Mr. or Mrs. Mayor, Mrs. Fire Commissioner, Mr. Public Safety Person, why do we not have modern forestry techniques being what for manage these public lands that you people are in charge of managing? Why do we have all this detritus and fallen trees that are left over from Superstorm Sandy in 2012 and then in 2011, the Halloween storms here that knocked down all the trees and nothing's cleaned up? Don't think this is an issue where I live? A couple years ago, we had a dude going down Palisades Parkway here, right about maybe other side of the mountain, maybe 3 miles up, driving along. You know, this is like the old bicycle joke. Well, how come your bicycle broke? Well, I was just riding along, right? JRA is what they used to call it back in the day. Well, dude was just riding along. A tree fell from the Palisades Parkway onto his truck. Killed him. So this is an issue where things are not being managed. Now, if you have an error, now here's something. You don't want to know why I know this. All right, because that's a story for another day, and we'd probably get our asses sued if I told you the whole story. For the government to be held liable for something in New Jersey, right, they have to receive notice. Unless the law has changed the last 20 years, they have to receive notice that there is an issue. Once they receive notice, and that is documented, that they receive notice, now they're liable. So you go out in your community looking for safety hazards, and guess what? It's, hey, you got this safety hazard, you got this safety hazard. I was in the sports fields a couple years back, and I found a safety hazard. I photographed it, sent it on over to the mayor. Hey, dude, this is it. Guess what? Sporting event was on a Saturday afternoon. Guess what? Monday morning, well, we had another sporting activity there. Done. Remediated. I had done some makeshift stuff to block off the safety issue, but you know how people are. Done. Taken care of. Because they received notice. You can't fault them for not knowing what the fault is. Meaning, you know, shame on you if they don't know something. But if they know it, now you can hold them responsible. Liability? Are they liable? Yeah, they would have been liable. But you know, so you got to let them know what the hazards are. So, for example, here's another one. You have the sidewalk, and you have a street, and this is in New Jersey here, right? You have a tree between the sidewalk and the street. Chances are that is going to be I believe it's called an easement or a right of way for the like the power companies. You're not, you know, right? You have to go, if a tree looks like it's going to go, you have to notify the municipality or whoever runs your town hey, that tree is ready to go. They will, no, chances are they're going to be out there in a week. They'll have that thing cut down. So you have to let them know ahead of time because they can't manage it. So in conclusion, here to this monologue, 25 minutes, holy wow. What do you need to do? You need to identify the hazards in your neighborhood, in your town. You need to take a picture of it, and you need to send it in writing to someone in the town. Maybe go to a town hall meeting. Maybe go to fire commissioner meeting, whoever the appropriate people are. And you bring this up because now they know about it. Right? And guess what? The public is watching. There's a very good chance that it's going to get taken care of. And if you're in New Jersey, I would go down there right now and I'd be screaming at the planners here. Now, this is likely going to become an issue in the governor's race because we have primaries in New Jersey coming up here in a couple of months. And I don't know who the Democratic nominee is. The Republicans, they have a whole bunch of them there. They need to address this. And I think this is going to be it. To do this. Now, since these are interstates, now there's a question of who's going to fund the repairs and everything else. I would think that if the state planned out the highway this way, the state would be liable because for this. So that's all I got here. I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving legal advice. But, yeah, you know, I'm just a dude on the radio.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to SafetyFM.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into SafetyFM.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
All right. Yes, Jessica, I am your father. So, I took a class this week over at Rutgers. It was the OSHA 502 refresher training. I don't have the permission of the person who held it, but it is a very well-known individual in New Jersey that held this class. And he wanted to have a talk about AI, and as you know, we do use AI here. I mean, who else is going to write a show tune song about Route 80 here? Other than AI and the weird sense of humor of Jim Pozell, right, who grew up listening to Weird Al. But anyway, Weird Al Yankovic, not Weird Al, you know, upstairs. But anyway, I lovingly say that, right? Grok is Grok 3, it is. The one on X that X pushes, so here. So you're going to put, Grok seems to be one of the more advanced AIs here. So I said, you know, what is the future of safety, OSHA, under the Trump administration? And here's what I got back. Predicting the future of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration under Trump in 2025 involves looking at current actions, past patterns, and stated goals. As of April 3rd, Donald Trump's second term has just begun, and early moves suggest a focus on reducing federal oversight, which could significantly impact OSHA. Here's an analysis based on what's happening now, what might unfold. Trump's first term saw OSHA's budget stagnate, The number of inspectors dropped to a low of 790 by 2020, down from over 900 under Obama, and a shift away from new regulations. Inspections decreased and enforcement leaned toward voluntary compliance programs rather than strict penalties. This history sets a baseline: less federal intervention, fewer resources, and a business-friendly approach. The current administration has already signaled continuity with this philosophy through executive actions like the Regulatory Freeze Pending Review Memorandum, which halts new rules until Trump-appointed agency heads approve them. This has paused OSHA's proposed heat safety and emergency response standards from the Biden era. And then it talks a little bit about Andy Biggs, a congressman from Arizona, and I'll add this, who's running for governor, who reintroduced the Nullify OSHA Act, the No OSHA Act, in February 2025, which has gone nowhere. Experts say the bill has little chance of passing given OSHA's entrenched role and a slim Republican majority. Even so, the proposal reflects a broader push to shrink OSHA. On the flip side, Trump has nominated Lori Chavez de Raymer, and now she is the labor secretary, a pro-union Republican with a record of supporting workers. Her influence might temper extreme cuts, potentially preserving some OSHA functions. David Keeling, tapped to head OSHA, brings safety experience from UPS and Amazon, but his business background raises questions about prioritizing employer flexibility over strict enforcement. Amanda Wood-Lehow is his deputy, has adjudicated OSHA cases, suggesting a nuanced approach, though still likely aligned with deregulation. What's ahead? OSHA won't vanish. This is Grok. Abolishing requires congressional action, and that's a problem, but it'll face a leaner future, spent fewer inspections and rollback. The Supreme Court's 2024 Loper-Bright decision. Now, apparently, there's two more pending decisions. Ending Chevron deference further limits OSHA's ability to interpret vague laws expansively. States with their own safety plans, like OSHA, like California, Oregon, and 25 other states, might step up creating a patchwork of protections while federal OSHA shifts voluntary programs, tech-driven safety innovations, as Chavez and Raymer has advocated. Risks remain without federal OSHA, going on and on and on. Now, again, what are we to do here with everything? So, right now, if you're worried about this, right? Again, OSHA is the minimum, right? Your organization, we're going to see how ethical and moral your organization is. If they say, well, OSHA's not enforcing, don't worry about safety, guess what? Now you know who you're dealing with, right? The other thing is this. Your state, push your state to say occupational safety and health is too important for the federal government to manage. We're going to manage it ourselves. And I'm sure that's something that a lot of states could run on. A lot of politicians could run on, right? Oh, with whoever's running, you know, hey, how about we manage our own affairs? That's another option. Companies, again, and I'll include labor unions on here, could work towards better state of working safely. There are other options. Just because, let's say the garbage men are on strike, doesn't mean that now we're allowed to dump garbage all over the streets. Just because OSHA is not as active does not mean that we can't hold people accountable in our organizations or anything else. So, a different point of view. I'm all for getting involved, pushing out that, Jim, that's you're unreasonable. Okay, I'll be unreasonable then. In 2000, there was a couple of political candidates out there that were pushing tariffs and either reducing or eliminating the federal income tax. As of April 2nd, yesterday, that's not such a foolish thing anymore, is it? Because it took them 20 years to do it. They're in for long haul. Political change here, advocating for, especially in the blue states, hey, let's regulate private employees here. Got to start the journey somewhere and have the state run it. That's my solution. Fight the safety war where you are. Don't worry about what the hell they do in Washington. All right, we're going to get on with some, I've been in school all week, holding everything in. So we'll go on back with some music. Hold on. And what are we going to do with this? Hold on.
Empty eyes, cold soul, no regrets. Heart of stone, darker than silhouette. Charming mask, broken dreams pile up high. Torn emotions, buried deep, never cry.
Sweet lies, roll off lips, smooth and slick. Empty promises play their trick. Calculated moves, void of love, no spark. Dancing shadows leaves a mindless mark.
I see through you and your empty stare. No sense of guilt, you're beyond repair. Twisted games you play with no end. Cold-blooded truth, nothing to defend.
Hopefully this is coming over on the video end, coming over on the podcast end.
In the game, selfish hunger burning like a flame. Emotions fake, just a means to deceive. Darkness around you, never leave.
Cunning for fun, your victims fall in line. Conscience void, a heart. Grandiose ego towers high above. Love's just a word, never felt true love. I see through you and your empty stare. No sense of guilt, you're beyond repair. Twisted games you play with no end. Cold-blooded truth, nothing to defend.
And that was Safety War with Hare's Checklist of Psychopathic Indicators. Yes, right. So here we are. We're going to run through some of the press releases here. We're going to be talking, if I can get this together, because I mentioned this to a couple of people, and I had some input from them on what this... Tuesday I was supposed to do this program. I delayed it for a couple of days. What we're going to, God willing, talk tomorrow or this weekend about a lot of information on what I want to talk about. And I'm not going to tell you what it is because I'm going to surprise everybody with it. U.S. Department of Labor awards $2 million for Washingtonians affected by Boeing layoffs. The U.S. Department of Labor today U.S. Department of Labor today. Why? Yeah, okay, we're on. I want to make sure you got that at home. U.S. Department of Labor awards $2 million for, hold on. U.S. Department of Labor holds enrollment at two main job corps centers. The U.S. Department of Labor today announced new enrollment will not be accepted at the Penobscot Job Corps Center and the Loring Job Corps Center remain. The job corps facilities continue to face ongoing sustainability issues due to rising costs. In the coming weeks, the department will continue to carefully evaluate these and other job corps facilities. U.S. Department of Labor awards $2 million for North Carolinians impacted by paper mill layoffs. U.S. Department of Labor today were awarded an additional $2 million to help North Carolina workers dislocated by the closure of the Pactiv Evergreen Canton paper mill by reductions at its Waynesville facility. The funding will ensure impacted workers have uninterrupted access to needed resources, including employment and training services. In June 2023, the Department's Employment and Training Administration announced the National Dislocated Worker Grant Award of up to approximately $7.5 million, with an initial award of $2.5 million. The funding enables North Carolina to provide retraining, skills developments, and job search assistance for dislocated workers in Buncombe, Cherokee, Clay, Graham, and Haywood, Henderson, Jackson, Macon, Madison, Swain, and Transylvania counties. In a Transylvania county, I just want to, okay, it's not Halloween, so I won't comment on that. With this incremental funding, the total awarded for the project to date is $4.5 million. Supported by the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act of 2014, National Dislocated Worker Grants provide a state or local board with funding for direct services and assistance in areas experiencing a major economic dislocation event that leads to workforce needing available resources. And we have unemployment insurance claims. This, again, I imagine this is going to really be impacted by the tariffs. So I was listening to a couple of people this week on the whole thing with the tariffs, and the opinions are all over the place. One thing that I will say, I'm not a financial guy by any means, is that everybody likes stability. And it's hoped that with the announcements yesterday, that there is going to be some stability here. And we'll be able to go from there. One question I will always ask here is this. So we have tariffs. So the president is having tariffs implementing. And they're very controversial because some people say, well, the tariffs are good. Right, because we're going to hold other people's feet to the fire. Some of them are saying tariffs are bad because the raising the price of goods and everything else. Right, and I get it. I mean that's not lost on me here. Any of this stuff, but. Let me ask this question. Other countries have tariffs against us. Reportedly, one of the first acts of Congress back in 1790, was to initiate tariffs. And they were good up until World War II. And no, some economists blame tariffs for the Great Depression. Right. Some people say no, not so much. So the they can do it to us. Why can't we do it to them? Well, what do you mean? You mean pain for pain, Jim? No, I do not mean pain for pain. I mean, why is it that we cannot tariff other countries? Now, I think I mentioned this before. I was mentored by a former ambassador to the UN, even though, okay, yeah, ambassadorships are lifetime titles. And he said, look, when we put, we negotiate in the UN, right? Well, the idea is game theory. We're half and half. You meet somebody halfway. You lose a little bit, they lose a little bit, you gain a little bit, right? Pareto efficiency, where everybody is better off, right? And you minimize the people who are worse off. So, when we go to the UN and when we negotiate these international treaties, we give concessions right off the bat. We don't advocate for our position so well. We give concessions right off the bat. So rather than a 50-50 type thing, or as close to 50-50 as possible, it's 70 in the other entity's favor. Right, 70% in their favor, 30% in our favor. And there's no equity. And I believe that's what the president is talking about here. But the fact of the matter is, pain for pain does not work. Well, you know, here. And I know there's going to be some Republicans out there that are like, well, Jim, you're not a true conservative. Jim, you're not this, you're not that. And I'm going to get some crap over it. But none of these treaties were negotiated, right? And even at the time, if you're paying attention, right, NAFTA, right, late 80s, North America Free Trade Agreement, right? Ross Perot pointed this out in 1992. All of our jobs are going to leave. So now we have 33 years of this. Some of those jobs are not coming back. Well, it is. There are people, right, we can't find some at-risk people. People don't want to do a lot of these jobs, these manufacturing jobs. Some of the things that went overseas, let's remember, clothing manufacturing. Went overseas, went to Mexico. So like low-end stuff, you look at shirts, right, made in Taiwan, made in Vietnam, Thailand, everything. A lot of these things are not coming back. Now, we have all of this going on with the tariffs, but what other people don't realize, and we've mentioned this on the program all over, and I was just listening to another program on this Tuesday night. Demographics. The demographics are all screwed up in our country. And more so in the rest of the world. Demographics are what drive the economy. And it's believed that people are not being honest with the demographics stuff, which we're going to talk about, God willing, tomorrow, this weekend here. And there's a lot of things. Why? Because now 35-year-olds, right, are supposed to buy stuff. They're supposed to have families. Buy stuff, affluence. When you're my age, right? Now you're starting to wind down. I have all the toys I'm ever going to need. I'm sorry, I do. That's a story for another day where we had to clean out both my parents' house, right? And, you know, you get sick and you do that and you're like, you know what, I'm not going to do this to anybody else in my life. So you start getting rid of stuff. You're not buying stuff. No, what do I spend money on? Books, right? And business expenses. That's it. I don't know. Personal stuff doesn't really happen, right? I walk around with Safety Wars shirts, right? That sort of thing. But what's my point here? There's a lot going on, a lot of moving wheels here. We don't know how this is going to happen, what's going to happen, because we have a whole financial system, so we'll see. Let's go back to sharing here, because sharing is caring. Right. Ooh. Wow. Okay. So here we have the seasonally adjusted data here. Okay, I got to stop sharing that. I hate when that happens. So let's talk about this unemployment claims. And these were out today. Transmission materials were today at 8:30 a.m. In the week ending March 29th, the advance figure for seasonally adjusted initial claims is $219,000 people, a decrease of 6,000 from the previous week's revised total. The previous week's level was revised up by 1,000 from 224,000 to 225,000. The four-week moving average was 223,000, a decrease of 1,250 from the previous week's revised average. Remember, these all get revised here. So any of these tariffs and stuff have not hit yet with this. The U.S. Department of Labor awards $2 million for Washingtonians affected by Boeing layoffs. U.S. Department of Labor today awarded $2 million in Washington to help workers dislocated by Boeing's company-wide reductions. The funding will ensure impacted workers will have access to needed resources, including employment and training services. Administered by the Department's Employment and Training Administration, this National Dislocated Worker Grant enables Washington to provide job search assistance and follow-up services for workers affected by the layoffs, including more than 2,000 in King and Snohomish counties here. So, again, that's a Dislocated Worker Grant on that. So, let's see what else we have. We already talked about that. And this is from April 2nd. I'm not going to share it, but U.S. Department of Labor awards $2 million for North Carolinians impacted by paper mill layoffs. U.S. Department of Labor today awarded an additional $2 million to help North Carolina workers dislocated by the closure of the active, right? And we already mentioned that, I think. And with that, what else we got going on here? Okay, we have 8 minutes left here. So, Jay Allen sent me over this story here, right, on NIOSH. And it's been all over the Safetyverse out there. You like that? It's in a universe, it's Safetyverse. And it is a NIOSH. RFK's Jr.'s layoffs expected to gut worker safety agency NIOSH. So most people have never heard of NIOSH. Now all of a sudden, everyone's talking about OSHA, NIOSH, Health and Human Services, Make America Healthy again, right? And and all that stuff. So at least two-thirds of the staff in NIOSH are expected to be laid off as part of the restructuring ordered by the Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy. Multiple federal health officials tell CBS. Around 870 staff are expected to be cut from NIOSH. Multiple leaders within the agency were told in recent days out of the 10,000 workers that are slated to be laid off from across the HHS services this year. NIOSH was created in 1970 to study workers' safety and health. Workplaces often turn to the agency to investigate outbreaks and injuries, like after deadly fungal outbreak that shuttered a Michigan paper mill in 2023. However, multiple officials said the new health hazard evaluation probes by NIOSH have been paused for several weeks and travel and communication restrictions imposed soon after the Trump administration took over. Health officials racing for deep cuts within NIOSH include workers at the agency's Pittsburgh and Spokane offices for some 200 staff. The vast majority of those working outside the locations are expected to be impacted. And it goes on and on. Probable effective date for the cuts is June 30th, according to the letter sent to the union. Let's read the full letter below. Where is this? So, do we have a copy of the letter? Well, hold on. They got other links here. All right. NIOSH's team currently sits within the CDC. They oversee several programs authorized by Congress, ranging from a national registry to study cancer rates in firefighters, to a program to monitor and treat people sickened during the rescue and cleanup on September 11th. Under the reorganization plan outlined by Kennedy, the reduced NIOSH will be combined into a new administration for a healthy America, along with several other agencies like the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Right now, here's what I'm going to hold on, right? Among other, no, they handle anything with diseases and then some. So let's download this letter. No, can't not let me do that. I hate when they do this. Hold on. I can do this. I can do this. All right. All right. Dear AFGE local, that's in the 1916. It's from the department. Let's share this. Hold on. Bear with me for a second here. We're doing pretty good with, doing good, but I don't want to jinx myself here. So here's the letter. Dear AFGE Local 1916, pursuant to Article 18 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement between the CDC and Prevention, NIOSH and Health and NIOSH and the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 1916, this letter serves as a formal notification that the Department of Health and Human Services will be implementing a reduction in force RIF of all employees in the noted competitive areas. The relevant information for the implementation of RIF are as follows. Probable effective date is June 30th. Competitive areas, and it's the whole alphabet suit of things, government agencies here. It would be the Office of the Director, SAGU, whatever that is, Administration of Commercial Fishing, NIOSH Department of Director Management, Fiscal Resources Management Office, NIOSH Fiscal Resource Management, Chemical and Biological Monitoring Branch, National Personal Protective Technology Laboratory, Conformity Verification Standards Development Branch, NPPTL Research Branch, NPPTL Evaluation Testing Branch, WTCHP Office of Director, Western States, Safety Research for Coal Mines, Health Hazards Prevention, Mining System Safety Branch, Human System Integration Branch, Developing and Planning, Minor Safety Branch, Minor Health Branch. And this is action is being taken in accordance with President Trump's Executive Order 14210, dated February 11th, and HHS's broader strategy to improve efficiency and effectiveness to make America healthier. So, I'm going to say this here. Okay, what's going on with the mouse? All right. I'm going to say this again. We're not sure exactly how all of this is going to pan out for us. So, it is what it is here. Hold on. I'm going to assume we're still broadcasting here because the mixer board is recording. So that's all I got for tonight for Safety Wars. I want to thank everybody for hanging in there with us over the last several years. And God willing, we'll be doing this again tomorrow, and we'll go and do what we need to do here. So here. With whatever it is we need to do. I mean, go out there and fight that there safety war. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Poelzel.
city's burning, skies are crying. Smoke and ashes keep us sighing. Horns are gone.
Hi, this is...
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.